Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the Wing and Tail Outdoors podcast. On today's episode, we welcome back Dorch Huang of Fire Knock to discuss some of the issues that I've been experiencing with my arrow setup. Now, I know I promised you guys that I would start to kind of dial back from these gear reviews and gear episodes and stuff like that. But the truth is, I've run into a problem that many archers will experience if you start to chase the dragon that I have been chasing of speed and weight. My goal this year was to build an arrow that was within my weight, what I wanted for weight, which was over 415 grains. But I also wanted to try to hit 300 feet per second or more. With the purchase of a new bow, like you guys know, I've recently purchased a Hoyt RX-9. That bow is shooting at 300 feet per second with a 430 grain Aero Concept 2.0 arrow. Now, yesterday I went out to the range and I went out to broadhead tune my bow. And I found out quickly that beyond 20 yards, my arrow was not hitting anywhere near where my field points were. Now, in this podcast, we do talk about the specific arrow that I'm using. But I need you guys to understand that the issues that I'm running into are not broadhead specific. This is not a problem with the broadhead. My issue is that I am pushing the limits of speed and aerodynamics. Once you pass 280 feet per second, you start to demand more from your components. Because if your components aren't perfect and perfectly matched with one another, you can run into some problems, which is what I've run into. So today's episode is talking about these problems that I've run into, which are essentially beyond 20 yards. My point of impact for my broadhead and my field points are not the same. Even when I move my rest, it doesn't matter. It doesn't change. It actually moves my field point, which is not what we want to do. So we go into what caused this and different things that I can do to fix the problem, to remedy the problem. I don't want to give the episode away, but it's a good episode. So if you're not a speed demon, if you're not someone who is looking for the most speed and the fastest recovery out of your arrows, then today's episode probably isn't for you. I'll be completely honest with you. But if you're an archer out there who is looking for an arrow that recovers the fastest, goes into a tight stabilization spin, and also flies as fast as it possibly can for your specific setup, then today's podcast is for you. We talk about the possibility of changing vanes. We talk about the possibility of changing broadhead weight. We talk about the possibility of changing broadheads as a whole. And we go into a couple of different things. We talk about the problem that I'm having and all the things that we can do to fix it. To be honest with you, I was hoping to get into some more stuff like some of these new bows that are coming out and new tech that have been coming out on bows, but we didn't get there, which leaves us open for something to talk about in the future. So going into hunting season, I think this is a very relevant gear topic to be talking about. Now, before we get into that episode, I want to remind you guys that we are now partnered with the Nested Tree Stand system. And I got my Nested in about a week ago. And so far, I am completely blown away. I got to be honest with you. Last year, I was using the Treehouse. Oh my goodness. I should know this. I don't remember exactly what pack I was using, but the pack was large. It had a lot of space and it held my sticks relatively well. The Nested system, the backpack specifically we'll talk about right now, is smaller than the backpack I was using last year and holds everything I had in that backpack with space to spare, while holding the rails, the Nested system rails, while holding them perfectly and also having a frame pack built on the platform of the tree stand. So far, I absolutely love this system. The Nested system is going to change the way I hunt. I don't want to use the phrase game changer, but it is going to change the way that I hunt. With that being said, if you guys are interested in checking out the Nested Tree Stand system, head on over to nestedtreestand.com and use the code WT10 for 10% off your order. It helps you save some money and it also helps this podcast. So I want to thank you guys for your support. I want to thank y'all for joining me here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Outdoors podcast, where success is always a commitment away. Enjoy today's episode and we'll see you here again next week. Have a good one, ladies and gentlemen. Wing and Tail Boys podcast is brought to you by Truthsticks Custom Arrows. Built with FireKnock technology, Truthsticks Custom Arrows simply fly flatter, spin faster, and improve arrow efficiency downrange. With two signature arrows for the compound bow and a signature crossbow bolt, they've got something for everyone. If you're ready to take the guesswork out of archery and take the best performing arrow into the field, then check out Truthsticks Custom Arrows at wingandtailoutdoors.com and experience the truth of arrow flight. All right, what is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the Wing and Tail Outdoors podcast. On today's episode, we are joined again by Dorch Huang, except today's conversation is not going to be specifically centered on the science of arrow flight. Today, we're going to start talking about a very specific issue that I've run into, and then maybe we could jump into some bow tech a little bit. And because, you know, around September, August, September, October every year, companies like to drop their new bows, which to me makes absolutely no sense because most archers like to get familiar with their new bow and arrow before they start to shoot it. So before we get into today's episode, Dorch, it's been a minute since we got to link up. So how you been doing? What's new for you?
Things are finally getting crazy. I've been shipping as fast as I could. All the customers who have not get the bow done is now doing their stuff, arrow and so on. And everybody recognize, you know, you don't wait for the last minute. But then every year it just gets worse. Yeah. Starting 2015. Used to be people would start thinking about it in July 4th. Now, I would say more like August 4th.
Would you say, obviously, there isn't, I don't know if there's data on this or not, but would you say the majority of archers wait till too late to start getting things together? Or do you think a majority are kind of on top of it and it's the minority that are running, you know, up against the finish line?
I think it's based on age and also expectation of life, okay? I mean, I remember when I was like in my 30s and 40s, September 1st is where I really start thinking about hunting.
When does the season start?
October 1st.
Okay.
So I usually, at that time, I would call Terry out of archery custom and say, hey, what's new for this year? Because I may be mostly flying and doing my consultation work and say, what's new bow this? Is there anything decent, any good? And I say, oh, the new Matthew MQ2 is really good, or new Q2 is better. I say, okay, get me two of those. I'm 29 and a quarter. Let's get it set up. A dozen arrow with them in the case. I'll pick it up when I get time.
Just in time for the season, right?
Yeah, then I got the bow most probably, I would say, the first or second week of September. And then I would try to shoot it about four or five times. And then September come by, and of course, that's the time fall season come by, and then being a consultant for HR, you know, when you do with HR, GL, general ledger, and doing procurements, warehousing, all kind of software that I used to do, September come and gone. Yeah. And so is October.
You know, so and then
October, maybe October 10th, I would go to day. I'm already. I'm going out.
And then you throw kids into the mix and school starting late October, early September, and all of these things kind of coming together.
And it depends on, of course, you need to remember you have football, basketball, dancing. Mm-hmm. If you like girls, of course, some boys like dancing too. And you throw all those on top of that, and you try to squeeze some. And then not to mention with the tight finances and the time to scout. I mean, I remember the days when the first scoutings are like a LCD clock with a string. You sort of tied that across so that when a deer crossed it, you know.
That's right. It would break it.
This time.
You know, being a new dad, I've kind of realized the time restraint. So throughout the summer,
you haven't seen nothing yet.
I got myself another job. I've been landscaping, and luckily I'm landscaping in the same forest that I hunt in. So after work, sometimes, not all the time, sometimes I get a chance to get in the woods maybe for a half hour and walk around a little bit. But a half hour in the woods is like nothing. It's just enough time to get to a spot you found on a map, see if it's worthwhile or not, and walk back to the car. So I did that today. And usually, I got to be honest with you, not to pat myself on the back, usually I'm really good at looking at a map and saying, this is where I should be able to find sign, walking there and actually finding sign. Today, for the first time in a long time, I walked to where I expected to find sign and I found nothing.
That's not
nothing. Usual. I found one trail, which was actually a decent trail. I walked it for a good amount. But on that trail, I didn't find poop. I didn't find a rub. I didn't find a scrape. The only thing I did find was a tree stand. But luckily, over the last year, I have a couple other spots that are like bigger, like specifically where I would hunt for a buck because I found good buck sign. Now I'm starting to look for some doe sign. Being a first-time father, things are a little tight right now, so I'm really hoping to have a good season to where I can maybe shoot enough deer that I won't have to buy a lot of meat throughout the year and kind of save that expense. And for the first time in my life, I'm hunting out of necessity rather than out of leisure. And and it's interesting. It's a completely different – for the first time, I feel the pressure. Like starting this podcast and the YouTube channel, like obviously you want to have results. People want to see results. And without the results, people don't think you're valid. But for the first time, I have to be successful for my family. Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling that pressure this year. I really am.
Well, put it this way. Today, 3 days in a row, when I'm going out about 12 o'clock for lunch, I saw a velvet deer. So you should not see any rub at all. They're still in velvet, at least in Illinois.
Yeah.
But and they're stumpy velvet. We're not talking maybe 3-4 inches. I saw a 6-point. So from what I can see, it's like maybe it's more there in full velvet.
Yeah. And we have a bunch of that here. So when I go in the woods at this time of the year, I look for old rub sign. So, you know, rubs where the tree hasn't started to heal over yet, but it's turned gray now because it's been weathered enough. Or if you've been in the woods enough, those knots that you see on the tree that are only 3 feet off the ground, 9 times out of 10, that's going to be an old rub that is starting to heal over. You know, so I'm not looking for that fresh tan, white, brown color on the tree. You know, so I have enough of an idea of what to look for, but in this particular spot today, I saw nothing. Usually I can go out and I can see poop. I can see scrapes. I can see feed sign. I can see trails, something. I saw nothing other than another tree stand, which tells me that maybe that's a spot I shouldn't bother going to.
Now you never know.
I'll tell you why I went there. Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, the reason why I went there is because one side of the road is private, like communities and housing and stuff. And the other side is a massive run of this state park. Mm-hmm. The one side, like I said, the communities, you see deer after deer after deer after deer everywhere. In the communities, they're all along the houses. When you're driving that road that splits the two, they're all along the one side of the road, but not the other. So I was thinking maybe I'll hop onto the state land and find some deer maybe crossing the road, but I don't know that they're crossing the road, you know? So,
well, if you remember, I used to be really close to the group Suburban Whitetail out of Prince William County, Virginia. You know, they've got about 100 members, and each of them shoot about 100 deer per person per year.
100 deer per person?
Per year.
So in these communities, they did a call hunt a few years back because, you know, yeah, deer are nice to see, you're driving around, but eventually they become too overpopulated. You can't hunt them in these communities regularly. So the deer know where they can go to be protected. The truth is there's more than enough food to go around because everyone is landscaping and manicuring their property. And whether it's, you know, landscape type of plants that have been planted or wild stuff or trees that are growing in the woods. I mean, like I said, I'm in Pennsylvania, so the houses are in the woods. It's not like you have a, you know, it's a tree here and a tree there. There's trees everywhere and just houses planted in the middle, you know? So overall, you know, this year I got smart. I made sure I went out and got my doe tag early. Last year, I forgot to get my doe tag, which was a little disheartening because every time I went out, the only thing I could do was shoot a buck. So eventually I stopped hunting Pennsylvania and just focused on my New York property where I could shoot either or. So this year I've kind of set myself up a little bit better.
Yeah, in Illinois, you know, you can get a 26, 25 bucks. You got two tags. One is called either sex, the other is called doe.
Yeah.
So you hold it, you got two does, you shot both. And usually what happens, the season happened like last year, I get six tags. I got three sets of tags right on the get-go, that's six deer. So after I never see any decent bucks, I focus on those. So I shot six of them.
Hey, that's the way to do it. If you got it like that, I might be taking a trip out to Illinois this year.
Well, actually, I've got a good buddy who got about 2,000 acres. He told me if you want to shoot those, just come by and shoot them.
Okay.
I got to help two friends. Yeah, and furthermore, they're just everywhere. I mean, it was so... I'll tell you this funny story. On the last day of the hunt, my good buddy Jim Moore with us, I actually was on the... He was on each side of me. He got a 17 point with an 18 spread in front of him. Then he got a 14 point. Then he got a 12 point. And then he got a 6 point. And then a 15 point. And then you say, what the hell are the those? Because I promised my buddy we're not going to shoot any bucks because it's pretty much the last day of the season. And finally, he turned around and he leaned his body out and shoot a doe at 62 yards and dropped it, which is on my Facebook page.
Sure.
With one hand.
What, with a crossbow?
Of course. You shoot a Deathstalker 420.
Okay. So now that we've had a chance to catch up a little bit, today, what I want to talk about to start is a very specific problem that I've run into.
Mm-hmm.
I've never, up until recently, I've always been on one side of the spectrum or the other. I'm either super heavy, super slow, or I want to be a fast, or I want to shoot fast. But recently, after, you know, you and I have had plenty of conversations, I've been trying to find the way to keep an arrow that is over 415, 420 grains and try to hit that 300 feet per second mark. Now, mind you, I'm a 27 and a half inch draw length. So I knew that it was going to be a little bit of a challenge to get there. Mm-hmm. But this year I got myself a new bow. I got an RX-9, a Hoyt RX-9.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit exactly 300 feet per second on the nose. Now, here's my arrow that I'm running so far. I was running, I believe, 85 grains up front with an 18 grain insert, 31 grain inner tube on the front, and a 31 grain tube on the back. So I'm actually shooting Arrow Concept 2.0. Mm-hmm. With a Arrow Concept shaft, 350 spine, Arrow Vane 3 on the back with the end cap installed and the fire knock, lighted knock, and the whole nine. So everything on my arrow, as of now, with the exception of the broadhead, is all fire knock. And for the first time in my life, I hit 300 feet per second.
Mm-hmm. Now,
a couple weeks ago, I shot a 3D shoot with my brother and a couple buddies. And everyone was absolutely amazed at how well my arrow shot. They couldn't believe that I was a 27 and a half inch draw length, and they couldn't believe how flat and how fast the arrows were shooting. So on the range, out in public, doing my thing, whatever, the arrows are amazing. I've never had arrows shoot so consistent with such a tight pin gap. So I'm very, very excited. So up until now, I have achieved everything I've been looking for. So this weekend I went out and I tried to broadhead tune my arrows. Now what I got was in the past, you and I have spoken and you said, as long as you're shooting a vented broadhead that is an inch or less in length and less than an inch, I think you said, and 3/16 or 3/4, I'm sorry, an inch and 3/8 in diameter, I should be okay. So I got together with Lee of Tooth of the Arrow Broadheads. I got the four blade vented 85 grain broadhead. So now my arrow is a total of 430 grains, which is right where I want it to be. I have a vented broadhead. It's short. It's thin. I think it's going to be great. I get out to the range, 20 yards, dead nuts. I mean, where my field point is going, my broadhead is going. So I said, fuck it. I'm just going to jump out to 50 yards. Why bother messing with the rest? If 20 is good and 50 is good, everything in between should be good. Next thing I know, my arrow is hitting 6-7 inches left and about 8 inches low, which isn't as bad as some of the arrows and broadheads that you've tested in the past. But it did not go well. Now, I want to preface this by saying this is not a broadhead problem. The Tooth of the Arrow broadhead is not the issue. I have pushed my setup beyond the threshold of aerodynamics don't matter. Now I'm in a scenario where aerodynamics do matter. And I find myself in a situation where I did not want to be. It's July 3rd as we record this. I shot yesterday, July 22nd. And now I don't know what broadhead I'm going to shoot for the season because I can't take that out into the field.
that.
Early season is so close in much of the Northeast, and fall food plots are on the minds of many. When it comes to food plot seed, Vitalize Seed has to be at the top of your list. Their multi-species blends work together to build your food plots from the soil up, starting with the 1-2 punch of Nitro Boost in the summer and Carbon Load in the fall. This combination helps to balance the carbon to nitrogen ratio and replenish nutrients in your soil year after year. They also offer other blends like Premium Clover Plus with oats and chicory, an annual clover mix, and a brassica mix if that aligns better with your management plan. In addition to their seeds, they have a wide selection of organic soil amendments to help tilt the odds of success in your favor. So if you're still in the market for some food plot seed this year, head on over to VitalizeSeed.com to see everything they have to offer. Because at 50 yards, I was missing, like I said, 6-7 inches right and 8 inches low. At 30 yards, I was still missing 4-5 inches right and about 4-5 inches low.
But at 20 yards, it's perfect.
And 20 yards is perfect. So first off, I want to say that if you are someone like me, where you're looking to get as much speed out of your setup while still keeping the weight you want, this is a very, very realistic problem that you will, or I won't say will, you very well could run into.
Well, now, let me tell you, there's three ways to solve this problem.
Go ahead. I think I know.
Take aerobing 3 off, put aerobing 2 on it, you'll be fine.
Okay.
You know why you have this problem?
Too much rotation.
Way too much rotation. Yeah. The broadhead is fighting your veins. And not to mention, since you're using aerobing 2, but aerobing 3, when you shoot aerobing 3, especially aero concept 2.0, what you discover, the aero technically go into about 200 to 230 revolution.
At 300 feet per second?
Oh, yes.
But that's what I was looking, that's what I was aiming for. This is what I wanted.
But you haven't listened to what I said.
Yeah, go ahead.
Without aero concept 2.0, the aero will pretty much stabilize at about 30, 35 yards into a full tilt. But with aero concept 2.0, it go into full tilt at about 18 to 20 yards.
Now, this is different from aero recovery, right? Because we spoke about aero recovery was done in
about 10 foot, 12 feet. Because with aero concept 2.0, see aero concept 1.0, using the arrows that right on the spine, you're looking about 9 to 12 feet. Aero concept 2.0, you look at 5 to 6 feet, not 16 yards. Okay.
So basically, this arrow is coming off of your bow recovered. It's not, but it kind of is. You're not shooting a deer at 5 feet.
And then, of course, because it's so straight, the aerobing 3 pretty much go into a full ballistic mode, in a full gyro mode, at about 15.
So using aerovane 3 with aero concept 2.0. Again, yes. For the listeners, Aero Concept 2.0 is an inner tube on the front and the back.
Yes.
It is the most now you can make longer inner tubes. We're not going to get into that. But for all intents and purposes, for a hunting situation scenario, the typical archer, Aero Concept 2.0 is going to recover the absolute fastest an arrow possibly can.
And not to mention the arrow going to the straightest. When you go to the straightest, it's not a bad thing. It's actually very, very good. But since you're using aerobing 3, your normal, remember, on a blazer, on aerobing 2, fully recovered, you're doing about 12 revolution for the first 20 yards.
Which vein is this?
It was blazer. 8 to 12 revolution.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Because if you're anything more than, say, 2 or 3 degrees, you're going into drag issue, you're going to turbulence issue, you're going into a fluttering issue, you actually become stalling the arrow. You're not able to drag kick in. But with aerobing 3, the aerodynamic elasticity kicked in, the vein will yawn itself. Now you go to full tilt. In other words, the vein is going to find the best flex to have the best angle of attack. Now you spin, and you spin faster. As you yawn more, you spin even faster. And that's where some of that 300 feet per second become real. Now you're looking about 250, 260-ish. It's not 300 yet because you're not shooting over 350. But still... Sorry, but it's all funny.
Yeah, no. This is exactly what I wanted, and I knew that I could potentially run into these problems.
I'm going to tell you, 2.0 is great if you stick with aerobing 2. But the moment you go to aerobing 3, because aerobing 2 would do about 90-ish revolution, which is not too bad. But at 200+, that's a whole different ballgame.
I know. Now, let me ask you
this. Sorry, it was just too funny.
No, it's okay, because I've always, again, I told you at the very beginning of this, I've always been somebody to go to the extreme. I'm an extremist. It is what it is.
But did everything I said happened?
Yes, nothing that has happened should have been unexpected. So here's where the big change is. In a hunting situation, mm-hmm. is there really a benefit to Arrowvane 3 over Arrowvane 2, with the exception of the weight? Let's just put that out there. Granted, I think it's like a difference of maybe 4 or 5 total grains between 3 Arrowvane 2s and 3 Arrowvane 3s. But does that rotation given by Arrowvane 3 offer a legitimate benefit to a hunter in a hunting scenario?
The answer is yes and no. Just like a super precision rifle, does it benefit the hunter? Answer is yes, and it's no. Because it will not benefit hunter in situation when it doesn't give you what you need, because you're just causing so much. And just like, what's wrong with a 12-power scope? Well, if you're going to shoot an animal at 10 feet, you can't see anything. Yeah. You see a blur at the end of it.
Right.
That's pretty much the same thing. But with Arrowvane 3, the question is how far you're going to go with the system. It's like if you want to drive a Ferrari and you say, oh, well, it's fantastic and everything, but I can't take my 2x4 or with me, I can't pull myself a good, nice 4x8 plywood. Well, you're in a different area. You need to maybe take yourself an F-150, okay? But then with F-150, you can take your kids to school. Yes, but at the same time, if you go take the whole baseball team to have quote-unquote ice cream, you're not going to make that happen. You need a minivan. Yeah. So which one is the best vehicle? Answer is that, what is your intention? To be fair with you, if you say, if I were you in that situation, if your distance of shoot is not going to exceed 60 yards, okay, throw Arrowvane 2 on it and call it a day, you'll be happy. But at the same time, if you want to, these days, you figure that you're going to shoot a deer with the wind facing you 25 miles per hour, and with Arrowvane 3, you're not going to make it. Arrowvane 2 will. Because Arrowvane 2, what I consider, is a more forgiving wing. Just like, it's a super tight suspension tuned car. Great. Yes. But you can't take your eyes off the road, and you can't take your steering wheel off the steering wheel, because everything you just barely touches, you are off the freaking road. Okay. The same thing. When you deal with ultra-high performance, there is price to be paid. There's nothing wrong with it. Okay. But you need to understand what you're doing. Just like I shoot my Death Stalker with Arrowvane 3 and Swing Blade for that exact reason.
Right.
Just like that day when Jim was sticking his hand out back over the tree lounge, 30 feet off the ground, at a deer that's 62 yards with a crosswind of 30 miles per hour. When he pulled a trigger, he don't even think twice. He dropped the freaking deer. It was 130-pound doe.
No,
he just spoke right through it.
Arrowvane 2 or Arrowvane 3?
Arrowvane 3 only. When I shoot, I use Arrowvane 3 only, because I'm using Swing Blade.
Yeah.
Why would I not? Because after I shot that deer, I saw the deer walk, maybe run, maybe 15 yards, stopped, look left and right, walk another 3 feet, dropped on the floor. There's no blood on the floor.
Yeah.
But that deer's dead.
Right.
So what he did is he shined his ginormous headlight into the deer. And then he called me, hey, don't see the spy in the middle of the field? That's where my deer is.
Right. We're definitely going to touch on those broadheads, because you said there are three things that I can do to fix this problem. I'm going to imagine that changing broadheads is obviously option number two. So option number one is to change broadheads. I'm going to assume option number two is to change. I'm sorry. Option number one is to change vanes. I'm going to assume that option number two would be to change broadheads.
Right, and that's not many broadheads you're going to find working.
Right.
See, the two of the arrows usually,
especially not at 85 grains, because that's the biggest problem I've run into. There are plenty of broadheads out there at 100 grains that I could use without a doubt. Mm-hmm. But my thing, and you and I have talked about this, my goal this year was to get out and test the efficiency of a arrow that was around 7% FOC. That is my goal for the year, is to try to shoot some deer with a very, very balanced arrow, which is the complete opposite of the trend that has been going on right now.
let me explain to you a few problems. In the old days, when you shoot 100 grain, a little bit more like a 9% FOC with the two of the arrow, that's no such problem because you've got some directional control, okay? As you decrease the front of center, every turbulence that come up on the broadhead is going to be exaggerated. And at the same time, you've got arrow ring three. That is significant. It's not a matter of like two or three times. If we compare it to a blazer, you are shooting 25 times more.
Right.
25 times. Not 25 or more rotation. It's 250 revolution compared to 8 to 10.
But that revolution is what I wanted. No.
I don't know.
It's honestly kind of funny.
But when you shoot that on a target, you notice how deep that arrow goes in?
Yes, we actually that's something that the people that I was shooting with were commenting on, because mm-hmm. they were shooting one, you know, they were what is it 144s? No,
mm-hmm.
166. They were shooting 166s and 204s, and their arrows were going in, but they were easier to pull out. And then they go to pull my arrows, and they're like, "What in the world is going on?"
Arrow just drilled into the shot.
Yeah,
because if you look at it.
Well, between the impact, because the arrow is going deeper, but not only is it going deeper, it's also rotating more, creating more heat friction, which it's, you know, there's a lot more going on in there than just hitting hard. But they hit.
Yeah, you actually melted in some form.
Right. Yeah. What were you going to say?
It's actually melting the target. Because I know when I shot that with the Nemesis, which is my 480 feet per second crossbow, when I shot something like a foam target, it literally melted.
Okay.
You go out, you can pull the white thread on the target because I melted it as it goes in.
Right. So talking about broadheads, I want to address something that I'll be honest with you, is a little bit of a concern for me and also a concern for a lot of other people that I've spoken to. You have three different broadheads, and we've talked about them in the past. You have your Trauma Hawk, you have your Dagger, and then you have your Swing Blade, and then you have three different versions of the Swing Blade. So really, you offer four different broadheads?
Four different versions of Swing. It's the Saber, the Talon, the Falcon, and Raptor.
Okay. So then you have six different broadheads, essentially, that you offer through Fire Knock. But it's my understanding that the Dagger, the Trauma Hawk, and the Swing Blade Raptor, I don't know about the others because the Raptor is the only one that legally I could use in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this before, that your goal when creating a broadhead wasn't so much giving a great blood trail. It was more causing, I forget the word, the phrase. That
cavitation process.
Yeah, but essentially causing the oxygen to be bled from the blood. With the cooling evenings of the last weeks of summer approaching, deer beginning to become more active and, in many places, preparing to transition into their early season and pre-rut areas. This is the perfect time of year to start laying down some mock scrapes and to make sure you have all of your lures ready to go for the season. Here at Wing & Tail, we look no further than Rat Getter Scents for all our scent, lure, and attraction needs. Over the last year, I've personally tested out their rack rope, scrape rope, their igniter drip bags, and numerous different scents. Not only have they all been effective, but the rack rope helped put last year's top hit list buck in shooting range, and that mock scrape area has now become the new community scrape location for that section of our property. In addition to products for deer, they also offer products for bear, turkey, and fish as well. Being a local small business, Gerard hand delivers every product to his distributors, giving him the opportunity to have his hand on the pulse and deliver products that local northeastern hunters are looking for. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to ratgetterscents.net and check out their full line of products today. So my concern is, on a good shot, heart, lungs, that broadhead will do more than enough. But what happens when you make a bad shot? What happens if you hit bone or rib or shoulder, or even worse, stomach or liver or intestines?
Then you're screwed. Because you have to jump. Just like everything is a compromise, okay? Like right now, you're on the borderline that you can use the Talon, which is the 1 3/8 inch cut swing blade.
Yeah.
But I do not know your setup because you had to actually shoot it.
No, like I said, the only thing legally I could shoot would be the Raptor, because I can't shoot anything that is considered barbed.
Correct. That's very true. Actually, if that's the case, your blood trail will be issues. But then depends on how much you shave, because the reptile blade can be sharpened. But then when you fully open, it's indeed a 1 3/8 inch cut. A lot of people don't like that the blade is, but at the end of the day, a 1 3/8 360 is a 1 3/16. The fact is that 99% of every single major league, all states, the legal is 3/4 inch.
Yeah, a broadhead. I'm sorry.
You can kill an animal with a three-quarter inch broadhead. So the size of the cut is not important. You simply, like, at the end of the day, you're dealing with archery. So placement is the only thing.
Yeah.
So any broadhead that cannot give you precision of where you aim, you got enough variables. If you start flying where you aim now, you just really have no control over anything.
Yeah. I mean, I was just listening to a podcast the other day where a gentleman took a shot at an elk. Missed the shot. The elk gave him another shot. He went to go reach for an arrow, shot it, killed it. Didn't realize at the time that the arrow that he pulled out of his quiver had a field point on it. He killed an elk with an arrow with a field point. So the truth is, it doesn't matter what you're shooting, a well-placed arrow is going to kill a deer. We all know that.
Yep, absolutely.
But we also all understand that sometimes buck fever gets the best of you. Adrenaline gets the best of you. Deer jump, deer move, right? So obviously we are partnered. I'm very much believe in fire knock, 100%.
No, I'm not. This is not a question.
Yeah. My thing is, I am considering using your broadhead simply because they're guaranteed to work with my system. Mm-hmm. But now, what other options for somebody else who's out there and listening to this podcast who is in the same boat as me?
The only thing left would be the Annihilator. That would be that about the only other broadhead I can think of.
Okay. So the original three.
Or I think they make a smaller one, don't they?
This is the smaller one. This is like literally, I think, 3/4 inch. I don't even think it's an inch cut.
Yeah, but this 100 grain, you want 85. Then
but that,
I don't
really have a... And there's my problem, because the only other company that makes an 85 grain head that I'd be willing to shoot, there are a few companies out there that make 85 grain. The only other one that I can see is the three blade Montech, the G5 Montech. But I'll be honest with you, I have reservations about three blades. Me personally,
no, three blade and four blade don't make a difference. The only thing that you said, the depends on which version of Montech. The original Montech with a longer profile, that one actually is better aerodynamic and is much significantly more quiet than the second version. Because the second version, the angle of the broadhead is significantly higher. Yes, okay. It minimizes the sound effect, but it also is less aerodynamic.
Okay. So is there any way to sharpen, or I don't want to say modify, because I wouldn't try to modify your stuff, but is there any way to sharpen your broadheads or to do anything? Like, let's say,
if you hold my blade with a parallel plier, and you just simply put the blade on the leather, it can be bleeding sharp because the material is the same. It's a 304 stainless, hardened to 53 HRC. It's grinded. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So now the sharpness of the blade is totally based on how far you want to go to sharpen it.
Yeah.
It's a single bevel.
I think I would shoot the dagger. To be honest with you, if I were going to shoot anything, I think it would be the dagger.
The dagger 85 is a fun piece because I think the only 85 dagger I got is the
titanium. I know.
Yeah, it's a pretty big piece.
I know. And that's my thing, is because I've shot the dagger in the past. I didn't not like it. It's just it was a little loud. I'll be honest with you. When I shot the dagger, it was a little bit loud. Anything vented is going to be a little bit loud.
That's the way around it. Because especially you notice that if you look at the inside bevel on one side, that is sharper. But that's how I create the negative pressure.
Okay. Now, is there anything that I can do to the dagger to give it a better blood trail? Because
you can just use leather on it, because it's a compact single bevel. You can just leather it.
So all I'd have to do is just sharpen it with like a strop and call it a day.
Actually, not a steel. You had to sharpen it with a leather.
That's what I'm saying. The strop. Yeah, like a leather.
That one. Exactly. Yes.
I might have to do it. I might have to because I don't know what else to try. Because even the swing blades, they're only they go 75 and then I think 95 and then 100. I don't even think I can get the swing blade in 85 if I wanted to.
That's true.
You know, so 75 puts me.
No, actually, if I were you, based on what you're dealing with, I would say go and shoot the 100 and see the result. Yes, you're going to drop about 8 feet per second, but you're still shooting 292. And that may give you the directional control you needed. I know you're trying to look for that super low FOC, but at the same time, remember, life is about compromise. We like to do what it can do, but if the setup based on your condition, I mean, you already proved the point that it should perfectly in a target environment. I mean, but then when you throw aerodynamics on it,
doesn't get more perfect than it shot. It does not. I'm telling you guys, I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm not saying this because I work with Dorge. I'm telling you, I've never had an aero shoot as great as the Aero Concept 2.0s. And then I'll follow it up by saying that Aero Concept 2.0 is for maybe 10% of the archery population out there. It's not for everyone.
It's like the people who bought a Corvette, but he wanted a CR1 with a mag package. That's only about 5% of people who buy that. But there's nothing wrong with the car. But if you want that, want that?
Yeah. No, and my thing is, if I shoot for a limit and I reach that limit, well, now I know where my threshold is. So this is why we're having this conversation. I'm trying to figure out, I'm not going to lie, I want to keep it. I want to stay at the 300 feet. I do. So my thing is, if you're saying try out the 100 grain dagger, I might as well.
Or the 100 grain tool with the arrow.
I might as well just try out the 85 grain dagger and call it a day.
Yeah, because you get an extra 10 grain more. It may just actually work better. That's a lot more things in it. Because see, when you're working, I mean, unfortunately, the fun thing is that you're gonna have fun. But remember, you're on the bleeding edge. So any slight swing can affect you significantly.
I'm not trying to
make your life difficult. I'm just telling you. When you start reaching that point, I'm not trying to talk both time out, but the fact you said when you're right on that edge, a tiny variation would tune the whole thing the other side, which you're seeing it now. I'm not just making this up, because that's exactly what you're seeing.
Whether you're a competition archer stepping to the line in the finals or a hunter drawing back on your personal best, you owe it to yourself and the animal to have the best functioning equipment out there. That's why when it comes to bow or arrow components, the Wing and Tail boys pick Fire Knock products every time. Every product they make is proven to outperform anything already on the market by 50% or more, and they have the science to back it up. They've even made it so easy to find the components specific to your arrow shaft with their Fire Knock Arrow Component Selector. If you're ready to up your equipment's performance today, check out fireknock.com.
But this is what we're here to do. We're here to take the information and test it, right? The only thing that I don't have that I would love to have, and we've talked about this, is a high speed, a super high speed camera. Because I'm out on the range now and I'm showing that this stuff works. I'm telling you guys, I've never had an arrow fly as great as this. Ever. Doesn't matter who made it, what Danes, what setup, it does not matter. I've never had an arrow fly this great. So now in my head, if I have an arrow flying this great, why would I want to change anything? I should.
Yeah, but you remember, you're dealing with aerodynamics now.
Yes.
Especially in the front. When you have this high rotation, any variation of aerodynamics have significantly more effect.
Right. You know, we've talked about this, and I knew that. I knew going into this that the aerodynamics were going to be a huge part of everything. And I've said that to the people I've spoken to as well, or the people that I've sold the truth sticks to. You know, so it's not like we're trying to hide any information or trying to be secretive or anything like that, you know? So most people listening to this are going to say, Chris, why don't you just go to a mechanical and call it a day? The truth is, I don't trust mechanicals. It doesn't matter who makes it. It's not a brand thing. It's not that I trust some over others. I don't trust moving parts.
Mm-hmm.
The less moving parts, the better.
Mm-hmm.
So could I go to a mechanical and just live with it? 100%, absolutely. And
now, let me put it this way. If you happen to get an 85 ring Rage, it won't fly right.
No, I've had enough problems with Rage that I won't. And I always said I don't want to poo-poo on brands on this podcast. That's not what I'm here to do. But I have had so many bad experiences with Rage that even if, and I know that they've been sold, I know they're under new ownership from when I used them, I still will not use them. And they're part of the reason that I don't trust mechanicals. But again, it just goes simply back to the fact of the more parts that move, the more that can go wrong. Now, I will say this. If I were to ever go to a mechanical, there are only two mechanicals that I would use. Yours and Sever. They're the only two mechanicals that I would ever try to use whatsoever. And it's simply because, A, I believe in your products. And B, I know enough people that use Severs that I trust their input and their experiences or whatnot to at least give them a shot.
Right, but just like everything else, at the end of the day, you are on the bleeding edge of the when you start taking over on aerodynamics. It was really, really difficult in some way. But at the same time, 90% of my customers, I would sway them away from AeroWing 2, 3 for hunting. But then for the people who enjoys it, I would tell them, don't touch that 300 feet per second, do 95. And you'll be fine.
Now, I will say this. George told me, if you want to play with Aero Concept 2.0, that's great, but don't use it for hunting. It's going to be too much of a headache. I went and did it anyway. Then George said, Aero Vane 3 is amazing. It's an amazing vane, but don't get caught using it for hunting. And I've done it anyway. So everything that you've advised me not to try, I did it. For two reasons. One, when people tell me not to do something, I go ahead and do it anyway, simply because there's got to be a reason you're telling me not to, right? The second reason is, again, I'm an extremist. I want to find that extreme. I want to find my limit, which now, for the first time, as a short draw archer, I never thought I'd reach it, but I have now reached it. So that's kind of where I'm at. To be honest with you, I'm probably going to go with the dagger. But now here's my next problem. If I go with the mm-hmm. dagger and it's a two blade broadhead, mm-hmm. now I need to index them 12 to 6 o'clock.
Right.
Now I know you offer the titanium spacers in different diameters, which allow you to get that, you know, arrow right. Here's mm-hmm. my concern is that those washers, those spacers that you offer are mm-hmm. bigger than the diameter of the arrow.
No, they're not. They're pretty much right on. They are very little. I mean, with the broadhead, it's similar on the neck of the wire. You won't feel it.
Okay.
Those are actually, the broadhead base is 516, and the spacers are exactly 8mm on the OD, which if you really look at it, is only 3,000ths bigger. And not to mention, they're made of GR2 titanium. It doesn't matter.
No, the weight doesn't matter. Now, I will, let me tell you about a little experience I had. Before you and I ever met, before we ever linked up and started working together, I bought my very first set of Aero Concept arrows from Jeremy Martin, mm. X-Ring Customs,
uh-huh.
which spoiler alert, we're going to have an episode coming out with Jeremy very soon at some point. We have officially finished recording the series, the Science of Aero Flight series, but I have not posted them all. The last episode discusses Aero Concept, which we had Jeremy come and join us. So now this is going back 3 years now. Jeremy made me my very first set of Aero Concept 1.0s. I put an Annihilator on the front of it, and I went out to – it wasn't an Annihilator. I was shooting the Kudu Points grain. I absolutely love those two blade broadheads. I might honestly still try them. The only problem is they only offer 100 grain. So if I go to 100, that might be the compromise that I need to make, but that's neither here nor there. So
actually, for your whole setup, I think 100 will solve the majority of the problem, because you lower the speed a little bit, mm-hmm. and you got a little bit directional control, and you still have the range of, you don't have to change anything. Yes, your sight tape is going to be changed, but then you're shooting New York and Pennsylvania. How far are you going to go? 50 yards, if lucky?
Not far at all, but I think that extra 15 grains is going to put me more in the 9-10% FOC range, which right. kind of takes me out of where I want to be for what I'm trying to do this year.
Right? Yeah, I understand, but remember, you already did that. Remember, target and hunting is two different things. Just right. like the moment you put a blade on it, your aerodynamic characteristics, it's like the moment you go ultrasonic, the shape of the airplane pretty much is dictate. You can't get out of that shape or it's not going to fly, period. Just like if you want a sports car, you can't take an F-150 and say with a big frontal hood and say, I want good cornering control in crosswind with this. It's not going to happen, period. Right.
So I go out hunting with this arrow. Now, it was at about 475 grains. This is, we're going back a couple years. So, let me think. They were 300. Yeah, they were about 465, 470 with the lighted nock and the whole system installed. Mm-hmm. I had a deer at about 10 yards. I was shooting a two blade. I got the titanium spacers. I made sure everything was north and south.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot this deer at 10 yards and I swore it was going to be a pass through. Now, granted, I shot her head on. It was a frontal. So there's a little bit more to go through. And the arrow, at the time I was shooting a 26.5-inch arrow. And I think about 4 inches was left sticking out of the deer. So it went in 22 inches frontal going through the entire animal. That's not bad.
Not when you're 10 yards. Right. If you're 30 yards, then you're in trouble.
Now, but I didn't get the kill. I did not get the kill because she jumped the string at 10 yards. I couldn't believe it. That look you're giving me right now, I agree with you. I didn't believe it. But I went back and watched the film in slow motion. She ducked and turned, and the arrow went between her vitals and her shoulder. So I aimed right where I put my pin, the arrow went, but she beat it. And I didn't get the penetration I expected. Like I said, I thought it was going to be a full pass-through.
And no, because you're too close.
In my head, what I think happened is the extra space on those titanium spacers caused enough drag to not allow that arrow to get.
It's not. The whole trick is because you're shooting that at 10 yards.
Even though I was shooting Arrow Concept 1.0?
Yes, it is. Because you've got broadhead. If it's a field point, you're recovered. Broadhead, and not to mention you got lighter knock, the tail is a little bit heavy. It's not fully recovered. You're below 10 yards. Mm-hmm. The arrow, and that means the arrow shaft recovered, but the energy overall is not recovered.
Okay.
Because then after that, the arrows are spooling up through the whole job. That's the reason it's really difficult when you start shooting an animal under 10 yards or within pad run range. Remember, the magic number should always be around 16. You saw people, yes, you may get some pulling back a little bit, even with arrow concept, but at the end of the day, you're dealing with approach. Yes, the arrow recovered in flight, but the aerodynamics, the internal force are not all there.
Okay.
Because, see, that's the reason when you start shooting really close. That's just like my customer out of Oregon. He's shooting a Scorpion that would be the Orion Extreme. Arrow concept, whole 9 yard, not 2.0. Shooting a 100 grain broadhead, a Rage. He was in full ghillie shirt, suit. The elk was broadside 9 feet. Hear that? 9 feet. He shot at it. The arrow exploded into seven pieces.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that.
And you got arrow concept. You should have barely made it, right? Because the arrow should recover in 9 feet. But then, what is 9 feet? From what point you count? Point of the arrow to there, or from your shoulder to there? All of a sudden, all these factors are kicking in.
Right.
And then you're demanding something like, remember, it's an Orion Extreme 170. That sucker have about 200 pound KE behind it on an arrow bow two, which is technically a Black Eagle Executioner with an 10.5 inch insert in the front.
Wow.
That much strength.
It takes up more than 2/3 of the arrow.
Because the arrow is 22 inch. So you take exactly 45% of the entire arrow shaft. So you think about it, the back side of that 10 and that 11 and a half inch cut into six pieces. So you show me, when he cut missing dodge, I need more arrows. So what happened? The arrow exploded. I mean, that thing is not, I mean, in full gear issue, the thing is 9 feet in front of me and I'm fired. When he say 9 feet, for all I know, it's 6 feet.
Right.
So let me ask you, see, the moment the broadhead hits, did the broadhead hit perfectly straight or the broadhead on an angle hit a bone and cause the arrow to go sideways? Then the whole thing gone. And not to mention, see, just in your case, when you think the arrow is going perfectly straight, when the arrow is still have all this violated energy in it, when your broadhead touched the animal, it caused the entire energy to go sideways. Remember, we just sort of recovered. Now you just see me put a, just like if you haven't stand up straight, I give you a push, you fall down.
Right.
Isn't it? I mean, that's the worst way. The arrow just recovered from chaos. Mm-hmm. Sort of. And then you push it in and you got a broadhead. Can you guarantee the broadhead is actually going in perfectly straight? Or you touch something? Then the whole thing would just collapse behind it. It's not, I mean, to be fair with you, the amount of space on the spacer have so little effect. It's technically, because remember, the broadhead cut already. So you need to think about the edge to edge of the blade behind it is where it is. If you have anything in the middle of the cut, yes, that spacer is behind all the blades. Mm-hmm. How many, I mean, just like after you put a hole in it, just find a piece of meat, put the broadhead through it. You'll find out that anything, the shaft, the insert, everything behind it, a third of it was never ever touch anything.
Right.
Because which the blade is...
Which goes back to us talking about the fact that micro diameters don't really offer as much of a benefit.
Exactly.
Okay, so that makes sense. So let me ask you this then. Let's say I'm still not a fan of the spacers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can I use an O-ring to...
That would be a worse. Then you lose penetration and lose directional control.
Really?
Yeah, because after the O-ring, the more you hit it, depends on how you hit it, the rest of the arrow will be compressed based on the O-ring. The rest of the shot will deviate from the center because you give it a suspension behind it. You're no longer a straight piece.
Okay.
The O-ring is the worst thing you can do to a shaft. It's all only right. Good. No, let me put it back. If you're shooting 260 feet per second, that's fine.
But in my case, at 300 feet per second, the O-ring is...
With high rotation, just like you're holding a drill bit and you all of a sudden your drill bit just go in and you slightly move your hand. The whole bill would go sideways, and then you come right off.
Okay. My next question: mm-hmm. Let's say I'm shooting dagger, and I actually have one. I actually have one here. So let's say I choose to shoot the dagger. I think this is the 100-grain steel.
All right.
I think
that's 100-grain steel.
100-grain steel. So if I'm shooting the dagger, there's more air in this broadhead than there is material.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still important for a broadhead that is designed this way with so much air inside of it, is it still important to get it 12 to 6? Or can I get away with...
This one is the exception to the rule because there's just way too much air. But remember, like everything else, it's the tip. Okay? So when it's coming down and up, that is less effect. It do not mean there's none. And I cannot tell you because your setup is Aero Concept 2.0 with Aero Wing 3. When right. Those things start catching, I think I'll quote Professor Selig. That's a very interesting design. The only thing we find out is to try.
So it is. I find myself in a good problem. That's how I explain it.
And then you know what the worst part is? After you solve it, you only solve it for you and your setup, period. You're not solving it for anyone else.
So then how do you, I'm glad you made that point. What solves the problem for me doesn't solve it for anyone else. Now, I'm gonna take a leap here and assume that what you mean is I'm on the cusp of, so we always say 280 feet per second is where aerodynamics begin to matter. And mm-hmm. then I think you then say over 300, it matters a lot. And over 315, it takes over.
Correct.
So I'm at that middle of the road where it could make a problem, it couldn't make a problem, right? So for me specifically, my short, and I think I'm at an advantage for once being a short draw. Because mm-hmm. being such a short draw and having such a short arrow, my arrow is going to recover even faster
than somebody else who has all the same exact specs as me, except a shorter or a longer draw. Mm-hmm. So I would venture to guess, and I'm probably going to try it, that the 85 grain titanium dagger is going to do the trick for me. But not it would true, not do the trick for somebody else.
Correct, but the 85 dagger also have a bigger blade, which is less port, which make the 6120 more important.
I'm sorry.
Because the 100 dagger have significantly less blade than outside. It's more ported. The moment you go to the 85 dagger, you look exactly like the 125. So the hole is significantly smaller.
Like the 125.
Yes, so the blades are two-thirds the thickness.
Okay.
So the spacer become more important.
Okay, so let's say I don't want to get rid of Arrowvein 3. Because I think at this point, we understand that I don't want to get rid of Arrowvein 3.
I understand.
If I have to, I will get rid of Arrowvein 3.
But you don't need to. As I said already, you just increase your FOC, you'll be fine. Okay. Don't be stubborn on it because it's easiest. Go and throw 100 big fuel points and then see how it flies. Because then you're changing the least amount of equipment. Okay. The only thing you need to do is that you learn your tape. Because your tape is going to be different.
So my other, well, it doesn't, I shoot the Garmin sight. So it's just a matter of going in and changing individual pins. And
whatnot, you simply honestly, like learn how to do the pieces. Yes.
Yeah. Which I do at this point. Now I go in, I do it manual. I do 20. And I know you told me, Chris, don't worry about it. Go in and do 20, do 50, do 70, go 20, 30 yard increments. I go even crazier. And I do every 10 yards. I do 20, 30, 40, 50. And here's the beautiful thing. For all of you out there who are listening who use a sight similar to the Garmin, if you do 10-yard increments, so 20, 30, 40, let's be honest, you're not going to see much of a difference from a typical regular built arrow. Once you get past that 50-yard, 60-yard mark, you're going to start to see the difference. But when you put individual pins into the Garmin, uh-huh, after a while, it starts to understand what your arrow is doing. So I thought once I got past 50, I would put in 60 and it would have me hitting super high, but it didn't. And then I got 60 on, I went to go shoot 70 and it was dead on. Then I went to go shoot 80. It was dead on. So if you're putting in every 10 yards, the sight is going to understand what it needs to do. If you're trying to jump 20, 50, 80, you're going 20, 30 yards at a time. Well, now you're going to see some discrepancies.
Right? Yes, exactly. So in other words, your setup, you have to really learn your setup and put a bit of time in it. The more advanced, the more critical your setup is, the more important it is to put your time in. Because I'll just tell you how stupid I got when I was first started. I thought that I should feel fun all my life. And then I put a hard chuck on it. And then the first time I showed the deer, I said, how come you didn't make it? Then my good buddy Snow would say, hey, and then his cousin Rick, let's go and set your bow in it. Then, of course, I take the hard chuck and put it on. The moment I shot a bow at 30 yards, it comes on. Remember, there's no light in that. In my eyes, it's not the best. The arrow goes out and then go like this.
I literally saw that happen at 30 yards, which I could not believe. At 50 yards, it makes sense. At 30 yards, yesterday, I watched my arrow go straight and all of a sudden just literally turn and dip. I saw it in real time. An arrow
with the lighted knock on the back because you can see it.
It didn't even have a lighted knock, Dorch. I wasn't even shooting a lighted knock. I just watched my arrow drop like that. Mind you, we're shooting at black targets. I have lime green and orange veins on the back of my arrow. So it creates a nice contrast going into that black backstop. And I literally watched the arrow dive. And I said, wow, that wasn't right. Let me shoot a second one. And it hit within an inch of the first one at 50 yards. So now I know for sure it's not me. I'm shooting consistent. I'm doing what I
do. Because your whole setup will cause the arrow. Remember, you're spine matched. So your whole setup now, based on their spine, with this, it's going to behave like that.
Yeah. So,
the consistency there.
Yeah. So I want to be respectful of your time. I know you got a hot date with your wife to go to tonight.
Yes.
So.
Or you can eat fish.
Oh, I like the sound of that. So I just want to recap real quick. For those of you out there looking to get the most speed out of your arrow, speed is not bad It just requires more specification when it comes to
shooting. And discipline.
Now, I will say I feel like I am consistent enough of a shooter to get the arrows to shoot consistently. I think that shows once I get past 50 and those arrows are hitting in the same place. I'm sorry. I shot at 70 yards, not with a broadhead, with a field point. And they were regardless, that's neither here nor there. So I can either change from arrow vane 3 to arrow vane 2. That'll probably solve the problem because there's less rotation. I can obviously change broadheads, or I can increase my broadhead weight. Here's the order of things I'm going to try. First, I'm going to try to change broadheads. I'm going to try the dagger. And the beautiful thing is you offer a 30-day money-back guarantee, no questions asked. So if I get them, I shoot them. I don't like them. I send them back to you. I get everything
back
except the shipping. Problem.
Yes.
If that doesn't work, I will then go to 100 grain, which luckily I have plenty of 100 grain broadheads sitting around. I have some. I have actually 100 grain daggers. I have 100 grain annihilators. I have 100 grain ramcats sitting back here. All of them have shot well in the past, but I've never shot 300 feet per second. And if those don't work, the only option then would be to change from arrow vane 3 to arrow vane 2.
Yeah, if you shoot a ramcat with that speed, you should get the ramcat SBG blade. I think I still have about 4 sets of those.
Let me see. I'm not sure which one I have. I don't know if you could tell from the video, but this is
the diamondback,
100 grain diamondback. Yep.
Yep, it's not as good as aerodynamic, and you're so loud.
So which one are you referring to? Because I
have single barrel grind. There's a Ramcat SPG, single barrel grind. You put 1-inch cut.
I haven't been able to find them. Do they still make them?
I designed those. They don't make them anymore. I still have about 5 packs of them left. If you need them, let me know.
Okay. And they're 100 grain?
No, just blades.
Just the blades?
Yes.
So what, I would pull the blades out of this and replace them with those?
Yes, that's all you need to do.
But these are single bevel.
Yes.
I'm very confused. Dorge is out in his workshop over there looking for some diamondbacks there.
No, not diamondbacks. Not diamondbacks, SPGs. Yes, see? Those are the old ones.
Whoa. Oh, those blades are significantly larger.
Okay. Those are SPGs.
So I would take the blades out of this broadhead and install those instead?
Correct. I still have 5 packs of SPGs.
Huh. That might be worth a try here, Dorge.
But the only downside is that you may have a small issue with the New York no bobbing law. But since the blade will swing backwards, it become a non-bobbing. Yeah, that's exactly how they get around the law, because the blade will swing back if you momentarily take it up. See, easiest way to know whether a broadhead is legal in New York, you push the blade into a barrel of hay, you pull the hay up. If the broadhead dropped off, it's legal. But then a lot of time people say, of your broadhead, it's hooked. But then they say that because the backside is less than 90, is about 90 degrees, it becomes legal.
Okay. Here's
because
here's
when the blade can move back forward, it becomes legal because it's no longer barbed.
Okay. Oh, I get what you're saying. The barbed hole doesn't allow the broadhead to be released. The New York, the way their law is written is if the broadhead sits at 89 degrees, it is illegal. If it sits at 9, I think it's 90 degrees or less to the front, it's legal.
Don't think that's the case, because I know a lot of people use a ramcat in New York. Because the blade will swing backwards. Well, you can call them and confirm. All right? We don't need to discuss it. I need to run.
Yeah, here's what we're going to do. If you can send me a couple dagger titaniums, I'm going to give them a shot. We're gonna start with that. Next time we get together, which I wanted to get to today, but we ended up just talking about this, which is fine. It's important. I would like to talk about some bows that have come out in the last few years, the tech that is on them, whether they're good or bad.
We'll do it sometime next week. Most probably I'll be in Florida. We can still do this. All right?
Okay. Yep. Fantastic. George, thanks for joining us. You have a great evening. Have a good one. Yeah. All right, guys, there we have it. I know I told you in the past that I was looking to maybe start to dial back on some of the gear stuff, but I ran into a problem. I've obviously been pushing these, you know, the Truth Stick arrows and the Fire Knock technology because I believe in them. And I've been pushing this limit of mine. And I finally reached the point where for the first time ever, I'm starting to have some problems. So I thought it was important for you guys to hear about all of that. As I mentioned in the podcast here in the recording, I'm going to start by trying out these 85 grain daggers. Depending on how they fly, the next step is going to be 100 grain. And at 100 grain, there are a ton, I mean, limitless options of what I can try. I'm not going to try a mechanical. I'm not a fan of mechanicals. So that kind of limits my options at that point. But there are plenty of solid broadheads, one piece, single piece broadheads, two blade, three blade, four blade. There are plenty of options out there. For me personally, I'm more of a fan, honestly, of a two blade single bevel broadhead. That's just, in my opinion, the most forgiving for a bad shot. If you make a good shot, it doesn't matter what you shoot a deer with. You're going to kill it. It doesn't matter. But we're not here just for perfect shots. We're here for all shots. So with that being said, I want to thank you guys again for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Outdoors podcast. If you guys have a chance, please scroll down to the bottom of the description here and show our supporters some love. We got a discount code down there for Nested Tree Stand Systems. Remember, use discount code WT10 for 10% off of your order. And using that code also helps this podcast. As always, I appreciate you guys taking your time and spending your time with us on a Thursday or whatever day you're listening to this podcast. So again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy anything else that you got going on. Enjoy this beautiful weather that we've been having. Finally, this rain is broken and we can enjoy summer. Whatever it is you're doing, just remember, success is just a commitment away. And until next week, have a great day, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you here next Thursday. Same time, same place. See ya.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kid will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.